When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
Mountains are there to be climbed, aren't they? Because you can't lay down and say, this is over. We're going to have to go down there, believe in ourselves, play a good game, improve from today, obviously.
Every time I look down on this timeless town.
It's Lukaku, and he's around the goalkeeper, and he's squeezed it in. And what a start that is for Manchester United in Paris.
Whether soft be her tears. More and more.
He's got himself. Spilled by Buffon. Oh, they've got another one. And it's him again, Romelu Lukaku.
I love Paris in the springtime.
Oh, the referee's going to look at it, Steve. What a moment this is.
Wow.
My word. Penalty. It's a penalty to Manchester United. Oh, he smashed it in! What a penalty from Marcus Rashford! Manchester United with another glorious night in the Champions League!
Look out there!
I love it. I'm so happy. I'm so happy.
The Manchester! The Manchester is here! Hello! Hello! Hello!
Fantastic night. You're just spirit of Man United.
I have rarely been more in love with my club or more delirious than watching Marcus Rashford tear away from the goal in front of the Manchester United away fans in Paris. Behind him, also knee sliding, catching up quickly, is 17-year-old Mason Greenwood, 19-year-old Heath Chong and 22-year-old Scott McTominay. After the game, there are so many great images, moments you just want to capture and put in a bottle. There's the academy boys, Gomez, Chong, Greenwood, McTominay, Williams, jumping about in a circle, celebrating what must have been the greatest night of their lives. There's five or six boys in United's light pink shirts, immersed in the fans. There's the moment the final whistle blows and those five or six boys sprint, Pereira, McTominay, no care in the world, across the full length of the pitch, forget the PSG players, to arrive at the away supporters and charge into them. There's the bench celebrating, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer disappearing as he is leaped on by anyone and everyone. And then, away from the Parc des Princes, there's the injured players like Alexis, Martial, Matic, screaming in their own houses with friends and family, just like we all were. In Paris, Manchester, London, Dublin, and then Kenya, South Africa, Malaysia, Mongolia, New York, there's these videos emerging of Reds of all different creeds, languages, religions, nationalities, whatever, celebrating, charging round the street or the bars of their city, their country, and chanting the name of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer or Marcus Rashford. There's a great video in Kenya, of fans storming out of a bar, waving their shirts and scarves in the air, singing ole, ole, ole. There's nothing on earth that compares We were reminded why football remains more addictive than any drug or substance can. An iconic night in Paris. 10 injuries, Pogba suspended, 3 teenagers, 5 academy players, including one that scores the 93rd minute winner away at the Parc des Princes at the age of 21. The club's greatest night in Europe since winning in the Moscow Reign in 2008. Cantona, Ferguson, Evra and others in attendance, and they all piled into the dressing room, a dressing room of chaos after the game, to celebrate with the boys who were finally fulfilling their legacy. The away fans had long left the stadium and the players were still singing Olé's at the wheel, serenading Cantona. Some have only just joined the club in the last 8 months or so, but are utterly embedded in its culture now. Figures like Dallo, Fred and the kids like Chong and Greenwood. They will have also got the inescapable bug now, just like us. Welcome to Series 4, Episode 31 of the Manchester United Weekly Podcast, revelling in the utter joy of a truly special night and special game that sees United progress into the quarterfinals of the UEFA Champions League. Jack, where does this victory rank for you in terms of our great European night?
Mate, what a night. It's got to be right up there. It's got to be right up there. Off the top of my head, it's, for me, 100% the best game since 2008. The only other game I can think of that had this sort of feeling was beating Olympiacos, coming back from, well, was it 2-1 or 3-1 down after the first leg, and Van Persie scored the hat-trick?
2-0 down, we were.
But this is on another level. I mean, first of all, we weren't playing Olympiacos. We're playing a team that was one of the favourites to win the entire Champions League. And we lost 2-0 at home at Old Trafford, going into the Parc des Princes against a brilliant team. And listen, it's just an amazing night. I still can't quite get over the fact that we got through. It's one of those nights that you'll never forget where you were when you watched the game. There are some games like that where your memory of it will just always stick, and you know you'll never forget what you were doing, where you were, who you were with. And this is definitely one of those games. That moment when Rashford scored the penalty, it was just unbelievable. And you're right about all the academy boys being there. I mean, we had 3 teenagers on the pitch to end the game. You know, 5 or 6 academy boys out on the park. And you see all the players from around the world, you know, wherever they are watching the game. The ones at Pogba and Evra in the stand saying, "C'est Manchester ici." And it was just brilliant. The whole atmosphere of the club is amazing at the moment. And it's not just the winning, it's the reactions to it that you just... It's amazing to see us in this kind of mood at the moment. And, you know, massive credit to the players, to the coaching staff, because, you know what, we got a lot of luck. I don't think it was a penalty, but I do not care at all. And, you know what, we deserve some luck after the refereeing in the first leg. And yeah, the whole thing is just brilliant. And it was just one of those nights that seemed to sum up everything great about this club.
Exactly.
A European night, you know, creating history away in Europe with 5 or 6 academy boys on the pitch at the end of the game. I mean, just what a night.
Yeah, and I think genuinely an iconic night. And I think it's weird because you see all the comments in the newspapers the next day, obviously on Twitter now as well, saying this is one of the club's greatest ever nights. And I don't think, I mean, for the players, certainly, I don't think that will sink in for a good couple of days. I don't think it will sink in for us either, because it feels like such a big victory. It feels like this just amazing night where you just don't know how to celebrate enough, because it was so incredible and so against the odds. 22-1 United were before the game to go through. For Manchester United to be 20-1 to do anything is pretty unique. And for them to then pull it off, it's just unbelievable. I don't think it will sink in as one of our greatest nights for some time yet. It will be in a week when I watch the highlights for what will undoubtedly be the 100th or 150th time, to settle in and watch Marcus Rashford sprint away with Greenwood and Chong behind him. It will be then I think we realise just how amazing this victory is. And obviously if United go on to win in the quarterfinals, in the semi-finals, whatever, then again, it will feel like one of the greatest nights. I don't think there's any overstatement in saying it's the best European night since Moscow.
No, not at all. I think partly the reason why this will take a while to sink in as well is because normally nights like this, that, you know, of this magnitude, are often finals, and so then there's so much time after the game to kind of think about it, to sort of reminisce, to look back at it. But we don't really, at least for the players anyway, don't really have time for that right now. We're straight back into Arsenal on Sunday. You know, the games keep coming thick and fast.
Instant focus.
Whereas if it's after a final at the end of the season, you've got the whole the whole summer to think about it.
Yeah. What was weird watching the game is, obviously, we got that early goal. I think that the 3 hours or 3.5 hours that involved the game, so the build-up of probably the half hour before, when you start to sway between these emotions of confidence and utter anxiety and then complete depression, and then suddenly are thinking, yeah, we're going to win and we're going to win the Champions League again. That weird hour where you're not depressed to go in watching the game. Then United score within the opening minute and you kind of have that feeling of this is, it could happen, but I'm not going to tell myself it will happen. And then particularly the final 15 minutes when United are going for it and you're telling yourself, it's not going to happen, it's not going to happen. Don't get your hopes up. And then they go to VAR and you've got that 2 minute spell of just complete tension. And the same when we're waiting for Rashford to take his penalty.
Oh, that was awful.
And then Rashford takes it, and that just that utter elation. That's what football's about. And you don't get that many nights a season, let alone a decade, where you go through that complete emotional roller coaster. Obviously, you get it in some games, even against substandard Premier League teams like Newcastle. You'll get that kind of when we come from behind 3-2, but it's not the same. It's not that complete. You can't be distracted in games like these against PSG. Away in Paris, there's no looking at your phone to be distracted. You're just so utterly immersed in the action. And that kind of gut-wrenching emotion, the complete and utter tension, and then just the ridiculous joy is why, as I said in the intro, football's more powerful than any drug, and why it shows how big a change there has been. And we've said it loads of times, so I don't want to say it too much again, but just that emotion that we now have with Manchester United is the sign of the times.
Yeah, that emotion at the end is something unparalleled. I can't remember a United victory being celebrated like that for a long, long time. You know, even going back to the FA Cup final in Louis van Gaal's last game when we beat Palace, you know, there was a lot of celebrations, obviously, winning a trophy, but it was nothing like what we saw yesterday.
I tell you what the difference is that every amazing win since Alex Ferguson has left the club has had some kind of caveat. So when we won the FA Cup with Louis van Gaal, there was a caveat of Mourinho is about to take over. When we won in Turin with Mourinho coming from behind, it was, well, we've been terrible all season. When we won the Europa League, it was, well, it's just the Europa League. It was an easy final. We had an easy run to the final, et cetera, et cetera. Yes, they've been amazing nights. And at the time, we've been incredibly happy and enjoyed it so much. But there's always been that little caveat.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. There hasn't been any other baggage now, you know, there just isn't that sort of emotional tension in the club as well, and so you can just enjoy last night for what it was, and just a truly special night for the club. I mean, there's some great pictures you can see of Rashford wheeling away to score his penalty with Mason Greenwood following up behind him, and it's just so many images that seem to sum up exactly what this club is all about and what and where we are now as a team. You know, United historically have always been the kind of team that wins against the odds. And you know what? This club just proved yet again why it's been so amazing throughout its history, because when we are up against the odds, we just manage to find something extra. And yeah, it doesn't always work, but when it does in nights like this, it's just an incredible, incredible feeling.
Yeah. Now, we should move on from just the complete delirious nature of our current words that are streaming out in no particularly sensible order, and talk a bit more about the game itself while remaining completely and utterly overwhelmed by a brilliant victory. But to start with, Romelu Lukaku, I mean, I just want to say that I can't remember how much we both criticised him. The thing is, we never criticised him hugely. I think we were both concerned that he wouldn't be able to find the brilliant first season form that saw him hit 28 goals. And I mean, I was wrong. There's no doubt about that. He's mugged me and many others off. And as I say, I don't think we thought he was a bad striker. I think we were just worried that he would never find that form again in a Man United shirt. But really, you can look back at his form since Ole took over. He never complained. He looks so sharp now. And there were games where he didn't look quite as sharp, to be fair. But against Arsenal in the Cup, he made 2 goals to reach the Cup sixth round. When we were hit by injuries, he comes into the side, scores 2 against Palace, two against Southampton, including a late winner, and then two against PSG to somehow send us into the quarterfinals. It's very impressive.
Yeah, it's massively impressive. And listen, there's probably a lot of people who still will not rate Lukaku, I think. And I don't think this kind of three-game spell has turned around everything that we've seen from him. But I have to hold my hands up as well and admit that he's totally proved me wrong. I was very critical of him. I didn't think his effort was where it needed to be. I didn't think he was working hard enough when he got the chance to play. And we just looked like an almost dysfunctional side with him playing up front rather than Rashford, especially when he did get a couple of chances under Solskjaer. But in the last couple of weeks, he's turned that on its head completely. And, you know, I'm more than happy to admit that I was wrong, especially when he's scoring two goals every game. Because I think that the difference is, in the last couple of weeks, it hasn't just been that his scoring rate has improved, obviously getting three braces in a row now, but his general play has got so much better. And that was always the knock on Lukaku. Even last season, when he was banging in goals, his link-up play wasn't great. And listen, he's never going to be a striker like Rooney or Suarez that will dictate the game. But we just need him to be a little bit more comfortable on the ball. And he is starting to get there. Playing with a strike partner, I think, helps him massively. Him and Rashford seem to be playing really well together. And I think that actually is probably the most important thing behind Lukaku's kind of turnaround. He needs someone else up there so that he doesn't have to be the one holding up the ball all the time. He can make those runs into the channel a little bit more like that he loves doing. And he still hasn't lost his scoring touch. He's finishing, despite all the chances he missed at the start of the season, which kind of, I think, was probably a big reason why he was so low on confidence. He's regained that scoring touch and he is a deadly, deadly finisher.
I think the thing we thought before still remains is that when Romelu Lukaku isn't being clinical, he's far from good enough for Manchester United.
Yeah.
And I think our worry was that he'd never find the ability to be clinical again. Obviously he has. And if he keeps it up, yes, his hold-up play sometimes isn't good enough. And yes, his ability to bring others into the game isn't good enough sometimes. In the last few games, it has been excellent. But if he can be clinical and score, not two goals a game, but if he can score at a healthy rate where he's hitting something like 30 goals a season, then we can sacrifice his ability to hold the ball up perfectly in the way that Wayne Rooney and others have been able to. That's fine.
It's a kind of similar situation to Ruud van Nistelrooy. Obviously, I mean, van Nistelrooy is a much better striker than Lukaku. They're similar players in that they don't actually offer that much beside their goals. But in the case of van Nistelrooy, throughout his career, especially while he was at United, his goal scoring record was so good that it didn't really matter that he didn't offer much else. But eventually Ferguson shipped him out because he realised that kind of the way forward wasn't to play with a traditional number nine who didn't really offer you that much in terms of his general play. It was playing with sort of a more sort of like nine and a half, as people like to say, kind of more of a hybrid between a number nine and a number 10, with Rooney playing up front with obviously then wingers that like to come in and score goals as well. And it's kind of a similar scenario now. They're obviously different players, but similar situations, I guess, in that the problem that Lukaku has is that he just doesn't offer that much beside his goals. So when he's in form like this and he's banging in two goals every game, that's obviously brilliant and we'll take that. But besides his goals, he doesn't offer that much. So it really is down to him keeping this kind of, not necessarily this form, obviously not scoring two goals every week, but at least keeping that very, very dead, very good finishing and making sure he's getting in there to create chances.
But overall, on an overall level, he was very impressive in Paris and in the other two games.
Oh,
I think it's worth noting that was his third start in a Champions League knockout stage fixture.
Yeah.
And he's had three goals. Given his age, I think he's 25 now, possibly 26.
Yeah, he's 25.
Yeah, 25 years old. But for a 25-year-old striker at this level, he remains at the elite level at least, inexperienced, even if on a Premier League domestic level he is hugely experienced and has a huge number of goals to his game.
The other thing you've got to say about him as well is that he scores some bloody important goals. Like, I mean, just think about it, even in the last week or so, you know, all of these goals that he scored have been massively, massively important. And he does just seem to have a knack of popping up in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, right. Let's talk about Solskjaer's and his coaching staff's tactics first going into the game. From the start, he put Eric Bailly at right back in a four-man defence. Some confusion over how we were going to play, and as it happened, we kind of played two formations for the first half an hour. I think it was a very good decision to go up front. I think they deserve credit for kind of unleashing Lukaku's strength by putting him in a two-man striking force. But, I mean, you can't argue that it was a bad decision to go with Bailly at right back. And it seemed a weird one to me because he's unfamiliar there. But even more so, the confusion appeared to be because United were constantly switching from a three at the back to a four at the back, depending on whether they were in possession or not. And to ask Bailly to do that, to come into the side, a centre-back, to come into the side, play at right-back, in quite a complex system, I think it was too much. And he was absolutely woeful. Obviously, hindsight helps, but I think from within a couple of minutes, it was fairly evident that it wasn't a good idea to play a centre-back who hasn't played much this season. And in fact, I don't think has played since the first leg against PSG at home. Not a great decision.
It just seemed unnecessary to kind of do that. Like, the players we had available seemed to dictate that we would have to play three at the back. And that was fine. I was expecting that before the game. I saw the team sheet and I just expected us to set up in a back three. And I think a 3-5-2 was the perfect way to go for us. Like you said, it was good that we went with two-man strike force up front with Lukaku and Rashford. And that was 100% the right decision. Like you said, hindsight is always 20-20, and it's easy to say this now. But the prospect of Bailly having to transition from a right centre-back to an out-and-out right-back anytime we went from being in possession to out of possession, that was just a weird option to take, and I don't think it was ever really necessary.
Yeah,
it would have been different, I think, if Bailly was actually a conventional right back who was kind of being moved into right centre back rather than the other way round.
Yeah,
but trying to go from a centre back to a right back is very, very tough, especially to do it during the game.
Yeah, exactly. To have to do it pretty much twice a minute makes it even harder. If he was just playing at right back for the whole game as you say, as a very conventional right back, I think he probably would have been able to cope with it. But having to cope with that complex system was very difficult. And his attempt for the goal was completely pathetic. I think Juan Bernat made up about 10 yards on him and stormed past him and then scored the goal. And as he was pulling away to celebrate...
And he was also the one that played Mbappe on side.
Yeah, it was woeful. Now, I don't want to dwell on that for too long. This is a ridiculously positive episode. But the change where Bailly came off and Diego Dalot came on was a good change, one that I think all of us were calling for. I hope it would have been made without the injury. And if it wasn't, perhaps Solskjaer and his coaching staff would have made note of the impact that it did have, and that maybe next time they will do it, be a bit more proactive without being forced by injury. Because on Saturday for the Southampton game, we saw Sanchez come off through injury, Dalot came on, and it changed the game. They didn't have to make that sub. I don't think they would have made it until 60, 65 minutes if Sanchez hadn't got injured. So perhaps the last two examples will help to make them more proactive in future. But it worked.
I said this last week on the last episode as well. I think if there's one area you can criticise Solskjaer for his management so far, for me it would be his subs. I don't think he's quite proactive enough. And I don't think... I mean, part of that maybe is down to the fact that we don't have amazing squad depth, especially at the moment with all the injuries. But I mean, to be fair to Solskjaer, I think this is actually a trend in management in general. There seems to be a movement at the moment towards, you know, like moving away from making early substitutions. And personally, I think if something's not working, you change it. You know, even if it's a half time, you know, if you can see that something's not working, why would you keep trying to do it? And now pretty much every manager is very, very reluctant to change anything before the hour mark. And I think Solskjaer in particular has been quite slow to react to some obvious changes.
I think there's been moments where he hasn't made the change quick enough, but I genuinely think at an overall level there have been some brilliant changes he's made. For example,
generally the changes that he makes are right. I think they've just been too slow in coming.
But I think if you go back to games at the very start against Huddersfield, we were 3-1 up, but after they scores, he brings on, I think he brought on Dalot, or perhaps he took off Dalot for someone else, and it just settled the whole game down. Against Spurs, he did the opposite. He brought Dalot on, helped to settle the game down. He brought Lukaku on to try give us an outlet up front. Obviously, Lukaku wasn't in great form at that point. Against Arsenal, he kept Martial and Rashford until Arsenal are ready to kind of be scythed open. I'm trying to think of other examples. On the off against Liverpool, we managed to cope with the game very well. And against PSG, takes Bailly off in the first half, maybe told him to limp off, and maybe it wasn't an injury at all, to kind of hide his terrible performance. Then moves to five at the back in the second half, copes with the PSG pressure because we've got that five at the back. And then he said before the game, I want to be in the game with 20 minutes left. He ensured that happened, didn't panic. That was one of Sir Alex Ferguson's big, big things, was don't panic until you've got 5 minutes left. Just make sure you're in the game. Keep doing what you're doing. Don't start hoofing it long. Don't start playing too quickly. Just keep doing what you're doing and you will score and have the belief.
Yeah.
We didn't let the game open up too much. Smalley and Lindelof defended superbly. McTominay was all over the middle. Huge interceptions and clearances. He was fantastic. Young was much better at staying with his marker than Dalot or Bailly could be. And eventually it worked. And with 5 minutes left, United were still in the game. He'd managed the game very well. He ensured that we had that 10-minute spell at the end to be able to find the winner. Brings on Tahith Chong, brings on Mason Greenwood. And yes, we get lucky with the penalty, but it came in a period where United were pushing for the winner.
Yeah, 100%. You create some of that own luck by applying the pressure. I like the fact that we didn't go too sort of gung-ho too early, because to be fair, PSG still looked dangerous up until sort of 85, 86 minutes. They were still had a lot of the ball. We were defending very well, and we were pressing high, we were pressing high very well. But PSG still looked dangerous. I actually thought they were controlling the game quite well and are seeing the game out in a much better way than I expected them to. But yeah, once it started getting past 85 minutes, then that was when you can start being a little bit more desperate. You know, at that point, you really have absolutely nothing to lose. But even then, you know, we weren't just trying to play Fellaini ball like we said last week. It was, you know, there was a few De Gea kicks long where we'd try and play out from the back. PSG were still pressing us, so fair play to them. And then we'd go long, you know, we'd try and reset, just get the ball into the PSG half and then get it down and play. I thought Chong actually did really well when he came on. He didn't have the ball tons, but every time he did get on the ball, he looked really, really lively. There's a few nice runs. He combined well with Shaw down the left.
He actually won the ball back three times within the space of 10 minutes. Which no one else managed to do on the pitch in the whole game.
And then even after the penalty, because obviously we had about 18 minutes of extra time added on after the penalty went in.
There were a couple of times
where he got the ball and he dribbled it out and got about 30 or 40 yards for us and just bought us some time, you know, because we were still under the cosh at that point.
Yeah, I think the key was just we didn't come out for the second half and suddenly try to get that goal. And I think because even if we had got the goal in, say, the 50th, 60th minute on the hour mark, whatever, you still have so much time to cope with it. And if PSG get a second, then they're just going to shut up shop.
Exactly.
And the whole thing turns into a different game. And I think it was the completely correct decision to just wait it out, kind of try and weather the PSG storm, which didn't end up being a storm, kind of ended up being a pathetic dribble of an attempt at finding it. Another goal. And I mean, they did deserve to lose. We didn't necessarily deserve to win, but they were poor. And it only adds to their reputation as...
Yeah, and I saw Tuchel after the game saying, I don't know how it's possible to score three goals without creating a chance. Well they, not like PSG created much either, was it?
Well, United had five shots. Would you like me to describe each one?
Yeah, go on then.
So the first shot was Lukaku's first goal. The second shot was Rashford's shot, which led to the third shot, which was Lukaku's second goal. United's
fourth shot Dalot's by any chance?
Yeah, the fourth shot was Diego Dalot, which hit Kimpembe's arm, which led to the fifth shot, which was Marcus Rashford's penalty.
Sufficient, what that is. Don't need to take more than that.
Five shots, three goals, and the other two created a goal. So, the thing is, you can't call United's performance like clinical or ruthless. It was. But it doesn't seem the right way to describe it. I can describe it in lots of words, but I don't know how to sum that performance up in I don't know, two or three words, because it wasn't that kind of clinical counter-attacking football. It wasn't a masterclass, but perhaps that's just because this United team and Solskjaer as a manager doesn't have that reputation of a Simeone, a Mourinho that would make this be described as a masterclass in kind of a cliched manner.
I think partly that's probably because this isn't the way that we play. You know, we are generally, at least under Solskjaer, a very attacking team. We play good football. And so I mean, Solskjaer probably wouldn't want this to be called a masterclass from him, because this isn't really the way that he wants us to play. Whereas I guess for managers like Mourinho and Simeone, this is their game, you know, frustrate. And it doesn't really matter how the goals come. You'll get them somehow. Anyhow they come is great. And so maybe that's partly why. But yeah, reputation probably does come into that a lot. Listen, I mean, the way I look at this game is that, was it lucky from us? I don't know. It was the penalty, I think, was lucky. I personally don't think it was a penalty for Kimpembe. But I also think Kimpembe should have been suspended for this leg after getting sent off in the first leg. That's another story. I don't think we were lucky in terms of how many goals we got. I think the penalty is the only thing you could say we got a bit lucky on, because ultimately, yeah, PSG had a lot of the ball. It's not like De Gea was having to make save after save after save. You know, this wasn't... I would say, for example, the win against Spurs is probably, you could say, is more lucky than this, because we were much more reliant on De Gea making a string of brilliant saves. PSG didn't really create any great chances. Yeah, they had quite a lot of shots, but most of them were from 25 yards out. It was in the second half especially, they were awful going forward. They created hardly any chances. And credit to our defence as well, because especially Smalling, Lindelof and Shaw had brilliant, brilliant games. Young did well when he switched to right back as well. Yeah, we weren't dominating the game, but we contained PSG in the second half.
I think it was an odd game where it switched so quickly, because if PSG had held out and United hadn't got that penalty, people would have... I don't think people would have put too much praise on them, but they would have said, look, they've learned, they know how to see out a game. And really, they didn't see out the game. Even if United hadn't scored, they would have... Yes, they would have literally seen it out, and they would have gone through in the Champions League, but it wasn't a performance which reeked of confidence or the fact that they may have learnt from their past mistakes. They didn't kill the game off. And as the team without 10 injuries, yes, Neymar was out and Cavani was only on the bench, but as a team without injuries or suspension, at home with a 2-0 lead, it was a pathetic attempt. And there's no denying that. I don't want to talk about them for too long. Scott McTominay and
to
Fred.
I think my last thing about PSG. I thought they saw the game out well until about 84, 85 minutes. And they did okay. They were keeping the ball well. Obviously, they didn't kill the game off with their second goal, which would have obviously been the killer. But I thought they were doing okay. They were keeping the ball a lot. They weren't going into that sort of tendency to just drop really deep. But then something switched around 85 minutes where they just went into their shell. They weren't trying to keep the ball anymore. They just went so deep. And even though we hadn't created any chances until the penalty, you felt like we were going to get a chance, because they were dropping very, very deep when, for the rest of the game, they'd been playing such a high line.
Yeah. And Tuchel, I think, has set them up much better than any of their previous managers have done. But even he couldn't cope with the might of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and Manchester United, who were helped massively by the midfield duo of Scott McTominay and Fred, who were pretty much asked to put in their best ever performance in the United shirt, and anything less wouldn't have been good enough. And that's a big ask, and I think they both achieved it. Fred was superb, having only come into the side pretty much in the last three games, did really well, and neither of them were there to create chances. And I think that was the big tactical decision, was not telling our replacement players to play like the players that they were replacing. Not saying to Scott McTominay, go and put in a Paul Pogba performance, or Fred. Not saying play like Ander Herrera or Nemanja Matic, because that wasn't their job. That would have been the completely wrong thing to do. And the midfield is where we should have lost this game, because we didn't have Pogba, Herrera or Matic. And yet, it's partly where we won it, because we stopped them creating, because all McTominay and Fred were told to do is forget about what you're doing pretty much when you have the ball, apart from starting maybe a counter-attack. Just stop them from being able to string more than five passes together. And that's exactly what they did. McTominay was tackling, intercepting all over the place. Same for Fred.
Yeah, you're 100% right. It was great that we weren't trying to play in the same way that we would have played if we had, you know, Pogba, Matic, Herrera in there, because it was never going to work. And you just have to accept that sometimes, that the players you have are going to force you to play a different way. And I think Solskjaer has done a good job, actually, of not trying to force us into the same style of play that we would normally have with all our players available throughout this sort of injury crisis. He's done really well to adapt and not kind of force square pegs into round holes. You know, we have just adapted to the players that we have. And I mean, McTominay and Fred were absolutely brilliant last night, especially McTominay. I thought his performance was sublime. He did so well. It was just everywhere. Anytime PSG had the ball in midfield, he was always there. I mean, and even times where he didn't manage to actually intercept the pass or get a tackle in, he was at least slowing things down, stopping them from playing quickly. Because that's when we had some issues, when they were able to get the ball forward very quickly. And Fred's been under a lot of pressure. And we need to recognise that this wasn't just a one performance for Fred. This was potentially a performance that will keep him at Man United next season now. I mean, I obviously don't know whether he will, but this is how important that game was for him. Because before last night, I was very, very sure that he would be leaving in the summer. And now I think there's a chance he might stay if he gets a few more games under his belt, a bit more confidence now going forward. And he was very, very good on the ball. He could still tidy up a little bit, but he did well to kind of get the ball forward quickly whenever we did have the chance to Rashford and Lukaku. But defensively, him and McTominay were absolutely immense.
Yeah, right. We must wrap up somewhat quickly, although we will continue to revel in this victory. We have a couple of questions, but before we move on to them, Mason Greenwood comes on, United's youngest ever player in Europe, the youngest player in the Champions League knockout stages since 2011. They didn't even have the right font on the back of his shirt, and he didn't get to do a huge amount, but him and Chong, I thought, both did well. And United have scored two or more in five consecutive games for the first time since April 2008.
Hey, we all know what happened in that season.
Pretty mental. I think going back to McTominay, I think the big thing is this time last year he was thrown in against Sevilla as a replacement for Paul Pogba, who was having a spat with Mourinho. And the cloud over McTominay's head has always been he's Mourinho's player who was only used as kind of a chess piece in the battle against Paul Pogba. Yeah. That performance against PSG has just absolutely shattered that theory. McTominay is not going to be Paul Pogba, but as we've said, he can easily turn out to be one of United's important squad players for the next half a decade or decade if things continue to go well, if he continues to put in performances like that, continues to be happy to use his position as a squad player and enjoy possibly winning trophies with United rather than searching for constant first team football elsewhere. Right, we should answer these questions. Michael Byatts asks, it was a sweet win, made even sweeter by Neymar whining about it, but if the goal is top four and winning the FA Cup, might United regret advancing? He says, I hate to be a downer, but the squad is already strained by injuries. I'd rather not play that midfield or defence in April or May. Well, I don't know how to answer that, because there is nothing this season that would make me trade last night.
Yeah.
There's very, I mean, yeah, you'd have to give me a large amount of money to trade for last night, because you could get rid of the Chelsea game and the Arsenal game away in the cup, because they were special, and the Spurs away game in the league and Palace away, whatever. You could get rid of those days because they've been hugely special, but last night was something else. And on the level of that day itself, perhaps last night as a feeling wasn't that much higher. The elation wasn't that much purer than the win against Arsenal, the win against Chelsea, whatever. But looking back at this result in a year's time, in 5 years' time, in 10 years' time, we're never going to forget this result. We might forget the Arsenal game. We might have memories of something we did that night, but it's not going to go down in history. This game will go down in history, whatever. And, I mean, the only reason we're getting top four is so that we can play in the Champions League. So there's no point. If we're going to play in the Champions League, you want nights like this. So I'd rather we didn't get top four and we had a run in the Champions League, which involved nights like this, than get
it. I get the logic in what Michael is saying. But like we said last time, being a football fan isn't a logical game. It's irrational. And listen, there's no reason why I wouldn't want us to go forward in the Champions League. And an extra couple of games, we're going to get so much out of those two games, regardless of what the outcome is, than we would out of potentially, you know, winning the FA Cup, for example. I just think we haven't had a Champions League run in so long. I think this is the first time since Moyes' season that we're in the quarterfinals of the Champions League. Is that right, I think?
Yeah, it must be, yeah.
You know, we need this as a club. We need this. And there's nothing better than a deep Champions League run. Even if we get knocked out in the next round, I don't care. This is the kind of night that we'll never forget. So yeah, all right, maybe it will be a detriment to our league form and the FA Cup run, but I don't care. Honestly, I want to see us in the Champions League. This is where we belong. It's where this club belongs.
Mountains are there to be climbed, Michael. That quote is going to stick around for so long, and there's no doubt about it. Just that little off-the-cuff comment from Ole Gunnar Solskjaer after the first against PSG. It's that kind of comment. You come out from losing 2-0, your largest ever home defeat. 20 minutes later, you're in the mix zone talking to BT, and that's what you come out and say. And from that point onwards, you just instill belief in your side. And you saw Romelu Lukaku talking after the game. So they were saying, when did he start to believe? And he was like, well, I believe 2 days ago. To be fair to Lukaku, is a player with intense self-belief. Every time he's asked about his form, whether he's in good or bad form, his confidence, it's just, well, I always believe in myself. I know I'm a good striker. I know I'm a great striker. And a part of me just absolutely loves that, because he doesn't care. He doesn't care if he's in bad form. He's always got that belief. And he said, sometimes belief is what changes it in the big moments. And Solskjaer's always said that. He said, you always have to believe you're going to score in that big chance. And obviously Lukaku did. Right, the second question. Do these performances do anything? Do you change your previously held positions on players like McTominay and Fred? And what would you like to see their squad roles be going forward this season and next? Scott Nelson asked that. We've kind of spoken about that. Yes, it changed our opinions. I don't think hugely. I think we're more impressed by Fred. I think McTominay is just kind of an extension of what we thought before. And we've always said Fred needed a genuine chance. And this is a competition which he impressed in, at least impressed English viewers in, was the Champions League. Next season, we can't say yet. We don't even know who the manager's going to be. We do, but we don't even know who the manager's going to be officially. So it's really difficult to say. In terms of their squad roles going forward this season, well, kind of depends on injuries. They're both going to play an important role. And the important thing is McTominay had improved in this injury spell. We hadn't really seen it from Fred yet. We've now also seen it from Fred. So it's another player to add, another little bit of depth to add to our squad.
Well, yeah, go back to Michael's question about all the games we're going to have coming up as well. It's the perfect reason why you need players like McTominay and Fred in good form, because hopefully come middle of April, middle of April when the quarterfinals will be, we'll have a lot of those players back. And we're going to need the squad depth, because we're going to have a lot of fixtures to come. No, FA Cup, at least semi-final, potentially final, at least two more legs in the Champions League as well. Still, I think, 8 games to go in the Premier League. So we're going to need every single member of our squad to be able to come in and slot into the team and play well. I still, you know, this run of very good form from McTominay and this good game from Fred obviously hasn't changed anything about who our first choice midfielders would be. You know, when Herrera and Matic come back, I don't think there's any question that they won't that they would have to, you know, compete for that starting 11. I'm not saying they'll come straight back in. It now allows us to be able to ease them back into the team a bit more, and not be able to have to say to them, you need to play 90 minutes as soon as you're fit. But yeah, I don't think it's changed that much. It just probably means that we have a little bit more confidence in playing them when we need to.
Right, we better wrap up. At full time, the average age of our starting team, or the average age of the team on the pitch, was 23 away at PSG, and we won 3-1 to go through to the Champions League quarterfinals. And then the players singing Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's name in the dressing room. We spoke about the cult of Jose Mourinho. I've never seen such a loyal and organically created cult towards a manager than Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, not even Ferguson, anyone. It's just like this, it's an indescribable feeling.
Yeah.
I don't think United fans have ever felt like this before. I don't think many football fans will have ever felt like this before, because it's not to do with the wins. It's not to do with success. Obviously, that plays a huge part. But there's just that something little extra.
Yeah, even compared to the Ferguson years, I think the relationship that Ollie has with the fans is different to what Ferguson had. And obviously, Ferguson was adored by everyone in Manchester and around the world who likes Man United, because he was the best manager in the world for 20, 30 years. But there's just something about the connection that Ollie has. I don't know if it's because he's a former player. I don't know if it's because he's a little bit more kind of open in his interviews and stuff like that. There's just something about what's happening at the moment, creating such a special connection between the fans, the players,
but most importantly,
the manager.
Ferguson, to me, and I think to everyone, is like for people of a certain age is a father figure, to people of our age is a grandfather figure, like the wise old man. He wasn't your friend. Whereas you feel like Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is your personal close friend, because he just seems like such a nice man. And so we'll leave it on that. So United without Pogba, Martial, Mata, Matic, Herrera, Lingard, Jones, Sanchez, Darmin and Valencia have managed to win in Paris. To prompt this impromptu podcast that wasn't necessarily going to happen if we lost in a rather dull way away in Paris, which everyone expected us to do. So, yeah,
we both messaged each other as soon as the game ended. Like, we need an episode now.
When's the earliest you can record? And then Jack went out to drink in celebration in Cape Town.
Hey, got some free shots from the bartenders, nice. A Man United fan.
Right, we'll wrap it up there. We've run over time significantly, but I don't think anyone will care. I'm certain there are people waiting outside their work listening to this, or maybe they did it with another podcast earlier, just reveling. As I said, I've said that word far too much today, but there's nothing better than being a Manchester United fan. There's nothing better than being a football fan. Thank you very much for listening. For more from us throughout the week, ahead of the Arsenal game, we haven't spoken about it because we haven't got time. You can follow Jack on Twitter at
UTDTate, T-A-I-T.
And you can follow me at HarryRobinson64 and the podcast itself at UTD Weekly Pod. That's P-O-D at the end there. Thank you very much for listening. I usually just say goodbye at this point, but feels inappropriate for the magnitude of the victory and the happiness and contentness which I feel right now. But now I've said that, I can just say goodbye. Have a great week. Goodbye.
Network. Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.